Okay, I know what you're thinking. No, this is not a repeat. No, don't fix your phone. Your headphones are working correctly. The wrestling guys have returned with an all-new episode. It's a revamp, it's a reboot, and it's starting right now. All right, coming back to you, not from the basement, but still from the forgotten borough, Staten Island, New York. This is the Wrestling Guys podcast. This is the fans' perspective on all things in the world of WWE and professional wrestling. I'm your host, Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, well, not really always, we're introducing him for the first time.
As always, for the first time. For him,
yes. We don't have a nickname for him yet, but we're going to call him Chris for now. Maybe see money, maybe see easy. We don't know yet. Like I said, we're rebooting the show. We're coming back with all new content, all new material. And since we're doing it virtual, we're doing it social distance. I'm going to give the virtual clink, which means I'm literally clinking two glasses together on my own. That's beautiful. It's a beautiful sound. I missed that sound. The show will start. I don't know how to get started. It's been a while. It's been a long time. Over a year, which is pretty wild. I've guest starred on Chris's podcast, I think twice now. And he has his own. What is the Fans Perspective?
Yep. A few times, actually. We did a couple of WrestleMania reviews. And do you remember we did the Warriors watch along?
Oh, damn. I was hammered that night. But great, great episode, actually. If you guys want, head over to...
Anywhere you listen to a podcast, we're on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, we're on iHeartRadio now. It's available on all podcast outlets. So yeah, check that out. But I'm happy to be a part of the Wrestling Guys podcast. And, you know, we're going to try to continue this and turn it into something big. And I'm happy to be a part of it.
I mean, it's fantastic because I, you know, famously, if you guys haven't heard this before, you heard this before, you know, our longtime partner, Drew, the Juice Man, passed away suddenly. So I kind of just dropped it because who wants to listen to just the wrestling guy, right? And I didn't know what to do. So, you know, I'm watching Hell in a Cell this past month. I was having a few cocktails. The last time I've had a few cocktails, to tell you the truth. And I was texting Chris like, damn, man, we need to do a damn podcast. I think more along the lines like we need to do a fucking podcast. But I'm pretty sure it's some person involved. And we just started, you know, we started spitballing. And I was like, you know, I have somewhat of a very small fan base. Let's revive the wrestling guys and see how this goes. And what better way to do it than Survivor Series, 30 years of The Undertaker. He's going to retire, or he did retire. This was last night. We're one day removed. Yep. I think the best way to do it is just get right into it like we normally do.
Dive into the Survivor Series 2020 review. Did you watch the pre-show?
I watched some of it. I watched most of it, but, you know, getting kids ready for bed and stuff like that kind of just on in the background. I did catch the Battle Royal, which was pretty cool, but I didn't, like, for the most part, I wasn't actually physically sitting down watching the actual show, you know, pre-show itself. Anything of prevalence like that I missed?
Yeah, I didn't watch the pre-show, but we saw a little bit of a highlight of it during the actual Survivor Series show, and The Miz won the Battle Royal, but it looked like Dominic Mysterio was getting, there was a little bit of a tease with him winning it, but then of course Miz came out of nowhere and threw him out and won. I guess Dominic Mysterio is a part of the roster now, huh?
Well, he's full time. He's on the SmackDown brand with his father, right? They finally settled the Seth Rollins feud, which felt like was going on forever because it looks like Seth is on his way out to be a dad for a little bit. They seem like they're all in on him. I think they're very high on him. I think he really impressed. I mean, a lot of that goes to how great Seth Rollins is carrying him in that match at SummerSlam. But then he's had a few, you know, pretty notable matches, some with Murphy, some with his dad in tag matches. And I think they're all in. It's a young talent. He carries the Mysterio name. I think eventually when his dad's ready to retire, maybe he'll even take the mask up as like the mantle. I knew Miz was going to win it, and I thought I'd win, but I'm going to come in and eliminate you a mile away. I actually thought that was going to lead to him possibly cashing in later, But the more they keep delaying this Money in the Bank cash-in, the more I think that Miz is going to be unsuccessful in the cash-in. I don't think he's going to, you know, actually win the world title. And I think that's one of the big reasons of taking it off of Otis as well, because I think they didn't know what to do with Otis once they gave him the briefcase. They still didn't know, okay, let's put it on Miz, because Miz is a, you know, he's a good heel. He has a thing going on with Morrison. And then I think for him, it's going to be like, well, he's the heel, McIntyre beats him, you know, it'll make more sense than Otis, the up-and-coming babyface, not to win, you know. So I think I went from the beginning of the night, oh, man, he might actually win this thing, to, no, I don't think he's ever going to cash in. He will, but not actually win it at all, you know.
Yeah, I feel like he might, though. I feel like he might cash in and win the title. I remember when he first won it, and I was just like, really? This is what WWE's come to, giving the Miz the belt? But, I mean, he's come a long way, and he's definitely proven that he is a hateable heel.
I don't hate the Miz. I mean, listen to me. I'm not a Miz fan. If people have listened to the show before, I was not a fan of his at all. He's grown on me a lot in the last few years, especially his runs with the Intercontinental title that he had. And the stuff that he does with Morrison, yeah, it's not bad, but it's entertaining. If they did give him the title, I wouldn't hate it, just because I know he would probably do a decent job with it. I don't see him in a long title run, though. You know what I mean? And now the way I see it is it doesn't seem in the cards. It seems like they're all in on McIntyre and Roman as the champions right now.
As they should be.
Yeah. For the record, I did call when Drew McIntyre re-debuted in NXT. I did say that he was a future world champion. It took longer than I expected, but definitely saw it in the works for him. Anyway, regardless of that, it's not here nor there. I'm getting ahead of myself here.
I mean, it's night and day with what he was when he debuted all the way back in 2009 to now.
I tell my sister, I was talking to my sister about how Drew McIntyre, when he first debuted, did not look the way he looks now. And her boyfriend is also a big wrestling fan. And she was telling me how he was showing her pictures. And she was like, you know, one, facial hair does a lot for a guy, which made me laugh. And then the second one was like, yeah, she's like, he looks nothing the way he does now. She's like, he looks a million times better. She's like, he looks like when he walks, he's like made of stone. And that was like one of the best analogy thing I could think of. I was like, yeah, that the way he carries himself, the way he moves, I like now with the kilt and the sword. It's just, dude, he oozes world champion. He should be where he is now. He should have been at the top of the card. Like me, I didn't like the pairing with Ziggler, although I got it. But then he went from pairing with Ziggler to pairing with Corbin to pairing with Shane McMahon. It was like, dude, just let him run with the ball. And when they finally did it, I was so happy. I mean, the circumstances being what it was, it being a pandemic now, he won the title with no fans. But I was still happy regardless, because it was like long overdue, way long overdue, honestly. And I'm just glad what he's doing with the belt now. He's really good on the mic as well. So, I mean, like right now, I mean, as you can tell, I'm a big McIntyre guy. I'm also a big Roman guy, though, I'm not going to lie. It was very hard watching that match, although it was phenomenal. But I guess we'll get to that point.
Yeah, we'll get there. So let's start with the main card. The opening match was the Team Raw, Team SmackDown, 5-on-5 men's Survivor Series match. Team Raw, AJ Styles, Braun Strowman, Keith Lee, and Sheamus and Riddle. Why do they do this? Riddle, really?
Well, I think the problem, the way I see it, is all the legal troubles that he's potentially going to be in. Taking Matt off his name doesn't associate with. So if you Google Riddle, you'll see WWE Superstar Riddle. If you Google Matt Riddle, you'll see the real Matt Riddle, now currently in a lawsuit with the girl who says that he, you know, allegedly sexually assaulted her.
Okay.
So you're splitting the two. I mean, it's splitting hairs at this point, though, because if you look at Riddle, probably it's like Riddle, aka Matt Riddle, on his Wikipedia. Right. You click on Matt Riddle, probably the case will probably pop up.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate that. It only works for certain people. Antonio Cesaro being Cesaro, it worked. It worked for Rusev. I don't like Riddle. I didn't like when they did it to Mustafa Ali. Nope. And you know, he got his name back. So, you know, I don't understand why, you know, certain people can keep their name and then certain people need to drop a name. It's just, it boggles my mind, the mentality of what's going on lately.
Right.
Yeah, I don't get it. Whatever. Matt Riddle, I think, is a hell of a talent. I think he has a long way to go. I see him top of the mid card eventually. But as Riddle, no. Like at this point, like give him a nickname or something.
Yeah, you know? give him something else.
You know, call but him bro. I don't care. Like Riddle's stupid.
But they defeated Team SmackDown, which was Jey Uso, Kevin Owens, King Corbin, Otis, and Seth Rollins. It was a clean sweep. Nobody on Raw got eliminated. Seth Rollins allowed himself to be pinned. And when that happened, I was just like, I don't get it. Yeah, I don't get it.
The sacrifice thing, I guess, because the whole it fits in with the Messiah, you know,
right.
Being a martyr, sacrificing himself for the team, but you're allowing your team to lose. I don't know if that's the write-off for Seth. I think it might be coming this Friday. I was very shocked that he didn't even at least, you know, get some offense in, and he was the first person eliminated. I don't know how that's going to play out, or maybe he cuts a promo on Friday where he steps out of the spotlight for a bit. But, yeah, man, you know, I didn't get that either. I also didn't get the clean sweep because if you would have asked me yesterday, I thought all signs were pointing to Jey Uso being the last survivor, fitting in with the Roman thing, head of the table, taking care of the family, right, at least. And, yeah, he was the last person on that team against all five of the Raw guys who were the most dysfunctional. And I guess the story there being, you know, they were dysfunctional. Who's the captain? Don't talk to me. Riddle wanted to give them all cool nicknames, but yet they came together to win. So I was like, all right, I guess.
I guess. And if you look at that team, I mean, I think Sheamus probably could have taken a fall and been eliminated. Riddle probably could have been eliminated. I can see having Keith Lee being a survivor because I know they're really high on him. I mean, AJ Styles is AJ Styles, and then Braun Strowman. You know, if you're going to pin Braun Strowman, it has to be believable. But I was surprised with the clean sweep. You don't see it a lot in Survivor Series matches, but I think with Jey Uso being the last guy, it made sense in what he's doing with Roman. But I think it would have been better for him to get at least a couple of pinfalls in that match.
Yeah, you know, I thought it would have too. But then when you get to the last match of the night, then it made sense a little bit. At least they told a story.
Right.
Where it was like, okay, cool. Like, because at first when he lost, I was like, damn, dude, they got swept. And he took the pinfall at the end. I'm like, holy crap. But then when you saw the main event, I was like, okay, you know what? It actually flowed. It made sense because, you know, a lot of these, not every single pay-per-view, I don't want to be like those people who are online who are like, everything sucks. But, you know, sometimes it could be very disjointed in terms of storytelling because, listen, it's a show, right? You should have a three-act structure, beginning, middle, end. Even in a pay-per-view, you should be telling stories. And it fit. In the beginning, it didn't. And I could see the tweets already with the, you know, what the hell is this? How are you going to, you know, all this crap. You know, SmackDown gets swept. It's supposed to be the flagship show now. But it made sense by the end of the night. And I think that's the problem with fans nowadays where it's like we're not letting stuff play out. We want instant gratification. We want something now. And when it doesn't happen now, it's like, you know, it sucks. Everything sucks. Creative right. sucks. Vince is out of touch. And, you know, so it's like, dude, just wait. Because I was the same way a bit. I was like, damn, man, that makes no sense to me. But then at the end of the night, I was like, you know what? Cool. You know? I was very shocked. I would say like, yeah, at least Sheamus, maybe Riddle, maybe it came down to Jay and AJ, because you know, like, you know, this guy has been main eventing against Kevin Owens. He's been main eventing against Daniel Bryan. Was he main evented three SmackDowns in a row? And then him against AJ, the last two with him getting the win would have been pretty cool as well. You know, really cement him because they've, you know, he's a hell of a worker with his brother and without his brother. The initial shock was like, damn, I'm surprised they got swept like that. You know.
And where's Jimmy been? Like, I know he's been popping up, but is he, like, injured or something?
He tore his ACL at WrestleMania in the ladder match. And he's been out ever since in that three, you know, that three-way, where it was just the three guys representing each team. And he's been out ever since. It seems like he's maybe nearing a return because he's been popping up on TV, popping in a few of the matches, more famously, you know, Hell in a Cell and stuff like that. So I think he's probably because of the burning Roman, but I think, I don't know. I mean, it seems like, you know, the ACL injury, depending on how severe it was, is probably a multi-month, close to a year, maybe 9 months, depending on how it goes. But I think he's nearing a return, too. I think that family thing is going to start cementing it with the three of them, and then maybe they add somebody else. I'd like to see maybe Nia Jax get in the mix, but, you know, she's on Raw.
Yeah, we'll get into the tribal family thing once we get to the main event. But the next match is tag champs versus tag champs. The Street Profits, the SmackDown champs, get a win over the New Day. The Raw champs, Kofi and Xavier Woods. I thought the match was okay. I saw Street Profits getting the win because I think it just made sense to try to continue to push them as not a new team, but you need to continue to build somebody. So when the match started, I was like, yeah, I can see Street Profits getting the win, and then they did. The New Day, they've been around for a long time now. I don't know if they're ever going to split up, to be honest, but the way to go was to have the Street Profits win this match.
Listen, the Street Profits need to be made. Being with the New Day makes them a big deal. I mean, they've been the tag champs for a very long time, and rightfully so. I think they're very entertaining. They can cut a good promo, and they could perform. Just they're awesome in the ring, and the New Day compliments them very well. I thought they had very good chemistry. I think the comedy back and forth in the weeks leading up was also very good. I just think that, yeah, you know what? I don't see the New Day splitting up either, but they don't need to. You know, like, yeah. I didn't think Big E needed to be split up for them from SmackDown because it could have been very well that they were a team and now Big E's starting his singles run. You know, I didn't get that whole thing of drafting him to SmackDown and them on Raw. I mean, whatever. I'm sure eventually they'll come back together at some point. Or, you know, I don't see the point in turning one of them heel to turn against them or stuff like that. It makes no sense to me. And the New Day doesn't need this win. The Street Profits, however, did. You know, you want to cement them as one of your top teams in a tag team division that, me personally, I think is dying. They're the two flag bearers because there's nobody else. I mean, you know, the Hurt Business with Alexander and Benjamin are really coming on. I thought they had a phenomenal match with New Day, the go-home show for Raw, but prior to Survivor Series. You know, but then, you know, where's everybody else? They split up Heavy Machinery, of course. You know, they had to have a turn on him. You know, like, and then a bunch of the teams are like ragtag, like, you know, Nakamura and Cesaro, good team, but it's like, what? Like, what? Like, they had nothing to do with either of them, put them in a team. And I feel best for Cesaro, too, because he's the quintessential tag team guy. It's like, we need something for Cesaro. Yeah, put him in a tag team with, and then they just throw a dart at somebody and see who it is. But, you know, he makes it work because he's one of the best performers in the whole entire business, honestly. You know, and what are the other teams? The Usos are not there. Miz and Morrison are kind of doing their separate but equal thing going on. You know, like, it's really just New Day and Street Profits when you think about it. Now the Hurt Business kind of in the mix, you know. So the Street Profits need this, and what they need to start doing is making other tag teams and making credible tag teams. You know, it seemed like the Forgotten Sons were going to be on there, and then, you know, this guy Jackson Ryker wanted to go on a Twitter, you know, tirade or whatever. They had to, you know, kill that push very fast.
Yeah, so, I totally forgot about those guys, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, so did everybody else. WWE was like, nah, take a break. And they just got there, which is terrible, you know? You know, I would have liked to see, like, guys like Breezango, who went down to back to NXT, doing some good stuff down there. And you know what, man? I don't know what the future holds for these guys. The Undisputed Era needs to make their way up to the main roster eventually. And I think there's a tag team right there that could be, it's putting in some work. And it's times like this where you miss guys like The Revival. That it's like, damn, man, if they really let these guys go, and they're over there putting in work in AEW with the Young Bucks, and it's like, damn, man, you know, I don't understand why they don't believe in tag team wrestling, because me personally, tag team wrestling is some of my favorite, you know. And but getting back, you know, we're going on a tangent here, but the Street Profits, yeah, it was they needed it. It was well deserved. It cements them as the top tag team on SmackDown, and I think eventually they need to build up other teams for them because they can't stay champs forever, even though they probably want them to be.
Yeah. And just to touch real quick on the whole tag team scene. I mean, we all read what we read online when it comes to WWE and wrestling overall. And we've all seen and heard that Vince McMahon is not really a fan of tag team wrestling. I listen to Bruce Pritchard's podcast a lot, and he's also brought it up that, you know, Vince doesn't really think highly of tag team wrestling. It's really a detriment to a lot of good talent that they have that could probably do some great things with that. I mean, we all remember what the Hardys and Edge of Christian, the Dudleys did with tag team wrestling during the Attitude Era. I personally think that they need to stop with the two sets of tag champions and just make one tag team championship belt. I personally do not like that there's a Raw champ and a SmackDown tag team champ. I was never for that. I just think, especially now because the tag team division is weak, they don't have a lot of tag teams. Ones that they have are thrown together. I mean, the Hurt Business feels like a tag team, but at the end of the day, it's just a bunch of guys that were thrown together that they didn't know what else to do with. And it's just, it seems to work. Like, I like the Hurt Business as a stable. As much as I like you said, Cesaro and Nakamura, I'm a huge fan of both, but it was two guys, like you said, are like, well, what do we do with them? Let's put them together and give them the belts for a little while. Like, that's what the tag team division is, and it shouldn't be. So I don't know. I hope I don't know what it's going to take for them to really invest more into it, but I think they need to unify those tag belts.
I wouldn't mind the two champions on two separate shows if they had the division to back it up, and they don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I would agree a unification because at this point, it's like you have two sets of tag champs with no contenders except for the Hurt Business for Raw, and there's nobody for SmackDown. Like, who are they gonna put for SmackDown for the Street Profits or Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode, another team that they just pieced together? You're not doing nothing. Okay, congratulations, you're in the tag team. It's like, you know, Bobby Roode, the same thing. Another guy who's underutilized. It's like, oh, Bobby Roode needs something. Okay, put him with Gable. He needs something. Okay, put him with Ziggler. Oh, you need something. Okay, he's gonna go away for months, and then he's gonna come back and put him back with Ziggler. You know, if they had the teams to back it up, it'd be excellent. They don't. And, you know, and you're letting these other people go away. Like, you release the Authors of Pain. You let the Revival go. It's like, so you don't believe in this division? Then don't make Street Profits and New Day centerpieces of everything that you do on the show and everything that you do outside of WWE. Right. You know, so you clearly need a division to strengthen it. And that's where the tag team division is probably the weakest point on both shows, to be honest with you.
All right, so moving on from there, we got another champion versus champion. United States champion Bobby Lashley gets a win over Intercontinental champion Sami Zayn. I mean, it wasn't a long match. It was what it was. I know you're not a fan of Bobby Lashley. I personally do like him. I think he's got I love his look. His presence is hard to ignore. You know, I'll never say that he's like the greatest worker, but his presence is hard to ignore. He's got something there. Sami Zayn looks like when he came back, like he was sleeping under a bridge for months. I don't like the way he looks. I don't like
he
his hair.
He does got the homesick going.
But predictable outcome with Lashley getting the win. But this match just felt like, I don't want to pick everything apart here, but to have them go against each other, there was no substance to it other than that they were both champions. One represents Raw, one represents SmackDown. Okay, let's have a match. And that's really all it meant.
That's all it was, though, right? I mean, you think about it, right? The Survivor Series now has become like your champion against our champion. You know, Sami Zayn reminds me of the guy that was a hippie in the 60s that got really into the movement. And then he felt like we needed a big change, so he became radicalized. And now he grew out his hair. He wears the OD green khakis or whatever.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's going to, like, you know, join the Weather Underground and start, like, you know, some militant crap. I kind of like the new look for him, though, the grown out hair with the overgrown beard. I think he's doing some great work with that Intercontinental title. I thought if he was going to win, it'd be like some underhanded stuff, you know, like a roll up or what he did with MVP, which I thought was clever, that he was like, oh, he tripped me. Like, he walked back and deliberately tripped over MVP. You know, I thought that was good. I think that's smart what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's good. Listen, I'm not a fan of Lashley. I will say, though, his work has vastly improved from when he was first in WWE, because that stopover in TNA, I think, definitely helped him. He was never good on the mic, but having MVP as the mouthpiece in the Hurt Business helps tremendously, because he needs that. He does have the look, right? He has the presence. He just doesn't do it for me, dude. And, like, you know, when he first got back, you know, when they were trying to push him as this, like, you know, ultra white meat baby face, I was in the U.S. military, I love my family. And the first feud he had was with Sami Zayn. That's when Sami Zayn went out with the shoulder injuries. And it was just like, I need something else, dude. And then, like, I thought the matches he had with McIntyre and stuff like that, it was good. I think he's a good U.S. champion as well. I think, there's always something missing there for him, but I think MVP fills in those gaps where he's lacking. So I think him with the Hurt Business is perfect for him, and he needs that mouthpiece. So I think right now, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there is no substance to this. But and having him go over strong like that with the Hurt Lock, cool, I get it. But this is another division. Where are the contenders for Lashley?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, we had Apollo Crews for a while, but where's everybody else? You have a Ricochet that's not doing anything. You even have Ali with Retribution, who's, he's has his little thing, but he should be going after that belt also as the leader. You're not going to push him as a world title contender. So push him to the top of the mid card. You have all these guys that are just kind of wallowing. So it's like, do something. You got Morrison there. You got Miz too. They need to another division where they need to start building credible contenders, because now it's just, I'm going to slap a full Nelson on you and it's over. It's like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, and Retribution missing from the show, which I thought was kind of strange.
I was for one of the big four to have one of your the things you've been pushing for so long just and not even like a promo or maybe even like they cut the lights out at some point. I don't know. It's like interfere or something like that. Surprise. Not even in the Battle Royal as well, or even if they went into the Battle Royal and wrecked everybody and just threw everybody out. Yeah, it's surprising. Either you're gonna get behind this thing 100%, or you're gonna do what they've been doing. And sometimes they're on the Raw, sometimes they're not on Raw. So either you're listening to the fans who hate it, or you're gonna let this thing play out. I don't know. I do recommend if anybody's really interested in where they think Retribution is going, listen to Corey Graves' podcast a few weeks ago when he had Ali on there, and he really explains why Retribution changed their names, why Retribution were put in mask. And if you know the backstory, the way he explains it, because they don't tell you on TV, obviously, it makes a lot of sense. And it actually gave me more of appreciation for Retribution in the long run. Corey Graves stole my intro in his podcast. But anyway, if you really want to hear more of a backstory, because they don't explain the backstory on TV, listen to that podcast. It got me more of appreciation. At the same time, it's like, why aren't you telling the story on TV either? You know what I mean? Right. Makes no sense to me. But whatever. I digress there.
All right. So then we got another champion versus champions. SmackDown Women's Champion Sasha Banks gets the win over Raw Women's Champion Asuka. Not surprised. I figured Sasha would win because they are putting a little bit more momentum behind her. Who knows really where they're going? It seems like her and Bayley, that feud is over, at least for now. And Asuka, every time Asuka and Sasha Banks face each other, Asuka seems to win. So I just felt like this was Sasha's time to get a win over her. She won. It was a good match. It really was. And I'll be the first to admit, I'm not the biggest Sasha Banks fan. I think that she definitely has good matches, but I just find her character boring.
Get out of town, really?
Yeah. I really do. I find her and Bayley just boring. I look forward to them wrestling because they put on good matches. But all the mic work, like everything before that, I'm just like, just get to the match, and then like that's it. I'm done after that. But I'm a big fan of Asuka, always have been, and this was really good. Probably the best match of the night, or at least one of them, and a nice roll up win. For Sasha Banks, I love the back and forth, and Asuka was like, oh shit, I got caught, and it was definitely a good match.
This was my favorite match of the night up until the main event. I thought this match blew everything previous to it out of the water.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think Sasha Banks is one of my favorite female wrestlers right now, along with Bayley. I love the heel turn with her, but Sasha Banks has always been my girl. My son loves Sasha Banks too, and I love Asuka as well. I think this whole redemption arc for Sasha, so her winning the title, then her successfully defending the title for the first time, because she's never defended it, never getting that win over Asuka, and she finally did. And the sequence of at the very end with the series of near falls, sunset flip, reversing that, going back to sunset flip, reversing that, and then she finally gets it, hooks the leg, she pins her for the three. Asuka's a little shocked, but then Sasha Banks immediately gets up and like she starts pumping her fist, like, holy shit, I did it. And I love that part because it was like, damn, I finally did it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was cool. And then at the same time, she did that, grabs her belt, no handshake, no nothing. It was one of those like, yeah, I got you this time. and she walks off, which is cool because it saves it for later. If you want to do it again down the line, whether they're on the same brand or we do it again, you know, somewhere else in a wild card thing that they always do, you know, it fits. And I thought it was good. They didn't, you know, they have to hug each other after. They didn't have to shake hands after. It was, yeah, I got you. You know what I mean? You've got me every other time. I got you now. You know, which I thought was awesome. And I thought, you know, this was like, I thought it was a fantastic match. I thought they both work well together. They both have insane good chemistry. And the women just, they seem to just be tearing it up every time. They're putting the men to shame at times, dude. This one was no different. And this was, yes, like I said, before the main event, this was match of the night for sure.
And this felt like, we talked about how the Bobby Lashley, Sami Zayn, champion versus champion match had no substance to it. And this, even though it's still SmackDown versus Raw, champ versus champ, this felt different because of the history that Sasha and Asuka have. So it just made it feel a little bit more important.
Yeah, but, I mean, they were feuding for months, right?
Right,
I mean,
yeah. So
she took the Raw Women's title off of her. They got rid of Kyrie. You know, they won it back. She won it back. You know, like, it was significant. You know, like, so they had that history right there. And now that Sasha's kind of like the face, kind of like a tweener a little bit. And now it's like, okay, we're going to face off now. Now it's champ versus champ. You know, like, yeah, it was great. You know, there was more substance to it for sure.
But do you think, you know, I'm going to reference what I said about the tag titles. Do you think that these two women's championships should be unified?
No, I don't actually. I like what's going on with both shows in terms of the women's division. It's very fleshed out. I mean, in SmackDown, you have a number of people with, you know, you still got Bayley there. You got an up and coming Bianca Belair, who I think is a future superstar.
Yeah, I like her too.
You know, you have who am I missing here? You have the Riot Squad. You have that Liv Morgan, who I think they're missing the boat on by putting her back with Ruby Riot. But you know, that's neither here nor there. You have Ruby Riot herself. You know, you have a number of ladies there that are young. They're up and coming, and you could really do something with them, put a lot of momentum with them and Sasha. And then you have that returning Carmella angle, you know what I mean? And then on Raw, you know, you have your Lacey Evans, you have your Peyton Royces. This thing that with Lana that's going on right now, which I think that they're positioning her to beat Asuka for the women's title. I just have that feeling that they're going to give it to her. You know, you have Nia and Shayna Baszler as the tag champs, which I really like a lot too. I wish they would kind of go over to SmackDown a few times also, maybe defend it over there. But that's another thing. I think the women's tag team division is suffering, but they have the pieces in place. Like, I don't see the point in breaking up the Iconics only to put Peyton Royce with Lacey Evans. You know,
yeah, it's a weird pairing.
Yeah, I like the Billie Kay thing that I like what she's doing on SmackDown, pretty funny, given her resume with her headshot. And she's always very entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, it looked like Peyton Royce was poised for a big run, and then they were like, here's Lacey Evans, guys, do something.
You know? Yeah, and they also have the women's roster from Raw, SmackDown to NXT and even NXT UK is very strong, you know, because even if you look at the UK brand and they have Toni Storm and Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai and Candice LeRae, and you can go on and on, their women's division is strong. And I don't know, I just think sometimes when there's too many titles, it convolutes it, especially when you're not using the pieces that you have to make it feel important. But they have enough women and enough good women to make both titles and even the women's tag titles feel a little bit more important. As I said before, I'm not a big fan of Sasha and Bayley. I get why they're the centerpieces, but we've seen enough of them this year. I want to see now all of the other women kind of step up and start challenging Sasha and Asuka for these belts.
But at the same time, was there a better storyline in the last year than the Bayley Sasha tagging together, tag champs while they were both women's championships, and then the eventual fallout? I mean, if it was up to me, I probably would have stretched that all the way to Mania if I could. You know, I thought that storyline was one of the best things going on either brand in terms of the women's division. I thought they were fantastic. I thought they did a fantastic job. I don't know if it necessarily what you said with convoluting. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, to be honest with you, like, you know, people complain so much about AEW's women's division, and then you look at WWE's women's division. It's like, dude, this didn't happen overnight. You know what I mean? There was, you know, look, we've said this a few times where for the longest time, We used to call the women's match in WWE the time to get a donut match because we didn't want to watch it. It sucks. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it was, you know, and now you have these women who are a lot of the times having the best match on the card. They're outshining, outshining the guys, mm-hmm. you know, and you have it to the point where, dude, like, they're, Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley put on a clinic last mm-hmm. Wednesday. That match was awesome, dude. And then even before that, the Halloween Havoc one, the ladder match with Candice LeRae, it was fantastic, yep. you know. And then you go to SmackDown and Raw and the little pieces they have, and they have these up and coming people who we haven't seen in the title division yet. You know, you have a Becky Lynch that's been out, you have a Naomi that's still yet to be seen, Charlotte's still coming back from injury. I mean, dude, like the two titles for me is good. I mean, I wish they would do something a little more with the women's tag titles, but I think the division is set where it is. You know what I mean?
No, I'm comfortable with the two singles belts because they do have a stacked roster as long as they start using them. Sasha and Bayley, I just feel like it's over and I don't need to see it play out for another however many months until WrestleMania. Like, I just feel like that's over. So now let's start using everybody else.
Yeah, no, I agree with you with that. I mean, it seems like they got something going on with Carmella. I don't know what's going on with Asuka right now. She kind of seems like in limbo. She needs some contenders.
Yeah.
I have actually Raw on as we speak, and it seems like her and Lana seem to be teaming up and doing something. So who knows what's going on with that. But I really do think they're setting up Lana to eventually become the women's champion, whether she beats Asuka or she beats somebody else. But I feel like that's where they're going with this underdog, I'm just going to stand around and somehow I still win angle that they're doing. I don't know. But I think that's where it's going for sure.
Well, speaking of, the match after that one would be the women's 5-on-5 Survivor Series match, Team Raw, which is Lacey Evans, Lana, Nia Jax, Peyton Royce, and Shayna Baszler. Defeat Team SmackDown, Bayley, Bianca Belair, Liv Morgan, Natalya, and Ruby Riott. And Lana was the sole survivor by standing on the steps and literally doing nothing. And Bianca Belair and Nia Jax were both counted out. Yeah, I mean, this is where they're going. And I don't want to sound like one of those typical marks, because I don't consider myself somebody who complains about everything. But is Lana's push here to maybe eventually getting the belt kind of them messing with the fans that complain about her all the time?
Absolutely. I think that's what it is. And I also think that it's the fact that people keep saying over and over again that she's getting punished because of, you know, Rusev, now Miro, going over to AEW, talking about the brass ring crap, doing the interview on Talk is Jericho, you know, almost like he's, you know, complaining about his run, rightfully so. I think he was underutilized, but whatever, that's the story for another day. I think where they're going with that, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, you think we're punishing her. We're going to put her through a table 7 weeks in a row, and everyone's like, it's unbelievable what they're doing to her. They're punishing her. It's not her fault, blah, 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 all this other crap. And it's like, I wanted so bad to see Lana put Nia Jax through a table last night, and it didn't happen. And it should have happened on the pay-per-view. It's one of your biggest pay-per-views. You've been setting this up for weeks. Why not have her get that revenge right then and there?
Right.
You know what I mean? Even if, because I was talking to my sister's boyfriend. We were saying, I was like, you know, it'd be really cool. I was like, first of all, I was like, Lana's going to be the ultimate survivor, I can tell you right now. And he agreed. And I was like, I don't think she's going to do anything to help win. What I do think she should do is, I was like, it should come down to Bianca Belair, which it did. I was like, and she should help Bianca eliminate Nia Jax. And then when they're like celebrating, she'll like roll Bianca Belair up or something like that, and then end up winning. I was like, she needs to get the one back.
Yeah.
You got put in the table 7 weeks in a row, and they all yell at you to stand on the steps, and you sit on the steps for the rest of the match, and then you still won. I'm like, oh, dude, I need something else. Like, you know, you built that up. You usually build stuff like this up to the pay-per-view. Your blow-off is at the pay-per-view, and they still seem to be going with it, because as I'm watching now, Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler are back out. Lana's with Asuka right now, and it's like, why didn't you have her get some type of revenge, whether it's small, as in through the table, or large, I'm sorry, through the table, or small, as in, like, you know, she accidentally knocks Nia or Shayna out and, you know, winning anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that out of this match, out of all the competitors, and I'm a fan of most of them, I like Bianca Belair, I like Ruby Riott. My favorite one is Shayna Baszler. I just think that she has, I don't know, I just really like her. I think she's such a badass to me, and she gets it. And, you know, every time I watch her, I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, she's so much better than Ronda Rousey.
I would agree with you. Ronda's definitely more of the draw. She's the better wrestler. Oh, yeah. She's better on mic. I think even though Ronda's pretty good on the mic as well. But I like Shayna Baszler too, man. I think she's great. I don't know why they soured on her singles run so fast. I thought she was gonna beat Becky at WrestleMania, and she didn't. And you know, now I kind of like the thing that she has going on with Nia Jax. The whole like we're a team, we're badasses, but we kind of can't stand each other at the same time. And I think she was the best. So I'll tell you this though, my favorite person in that match was Bianca Belair. I think Bianca Belair is a superstar. She's a future world champ for sure. I think she's going to end up being the face of SmackDown for years to come, I think. And she is impressive, dude. I mean, like, even my stepdad was over last night. He doesn't really watch wrestling anymore. And the first thing he said was, like, that's one of the most athletic women I've ever seen in my life wrestle. Because she was doing all the flips, the moonsaults, the cartwheels and everything. And he's like, and the next thing he said was, is that her real hair? Because, you know, she has a long ponytail. You know, so, you know, it was good. And I think, you know, she stands out among the rest. I hope that she gets her shine on SmackDown. Same thing, you know, I really would like to see maybe Shayna go after Asuka next, you know, even if she's with Nia Jax at the same time. She's a legit contender. She's a legit threat to anybody. Look what she did in NXT. I thought she was great in NXT.
She was.
You know, but they're really, it just seems like they're setting up Lana for this monster push. And if it doesn't happen, I'll be shocked, man. You know, like they just put it through a table. And then that's maybe when I agree with the fans. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, maybe she was getting punished. She went through a table for 7 weeks and nothing came. I don't know. It remains to be very weird.
Well, it's going to be fun to see if she does get a title run, the reaction from the internet community.
I mean, I think they'll like it and hate it at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, she sucks. She doesn't belong here. Oh, wow. They finally paid off a storyline. You know, whatever. You can't please everybody.
All right. So then the main event, champion versus champion again. Universal champ Roman Reigns gets the win over WWE champ Drew McIntyre. This was a really, really good match. I love what they're doing with Roman Reigns. I think, and I've always been a fan of his. And I love what they're doing. I was, when they did the technical submission finish, I was just like, huh, that's interesting. But I get what they're doing. Like the fact that he won that way over McIntyre just shows that he's the guy. And I love heel Roman Reigns. But this was a really, really fun match to watch.
This was match of the night for me. Absolutely. Yeah. I love McIntyre. Like I said earlier, I've always loved Roman. I love Roman since the Shield days, his singles run. I mean, me and Juice Man were big proponents of Roman back when everybody was crapping on him that he's getting shoved down your throats. And what you didn't realize is how great of a worker he is. And you're hearing it now from people like Jericho and people like, you know, Miro, Rusev, on how great Roman is, because he is. And he's always been that way. He's only getting better. And what I loved, and I think the thing that I was missing was, and I always just say was, dude, if you just watching early FCW NXT, there was a heel Roman in that system. Yep. And he had it, dude. And I was like, if you gave him that personality on the main roster, dude, he is the man. And with this whole head of the table thing, having, you know, Heyman with him, even though he could still cut a head of a promo himself, Roman, it's fantastic. You know, he only talks when he needs to. When he doesn't want to talk is when Heyman talks for him, which is great. Even little things like the little contract signing that they did Friday before SmackDown before Survivor Series, excuse me. He didn't sit across from Drew McIntyre. He sat at the head of the table. That was fantastic. That's like the little things, the little nuances like that is why he's such a fantastic heel right now. I love the whole storyline, the bloodline thing with the Usos, the head of the table, having Asuka and Zika there after the match to crown him as the tribal chief. Yep. The whole thing is working. It's the best storyline right now in WWE. It was right for him to win. To show that he literally is the big dog. He's the top guy out of all brands. But at the same time, they protected Drew. right? Yeah. The low blow, the interference from Jey Uso, and then you had the guillotine choke where he didn't tap out, he didn't submit, he didn't get pinned, he passed out after outside interference. So on all accounts, you still kept Drew strong, and I thought the match was fire, just hard hitting, physical, you know, great moves, great sequences. Roman going for the spear, he gets hit with a claymore kick, you know, stuff like that, you know, hitting the spear again. And I was like, oh, this is definitely over after Samoan dropped him on the table and then put him through the table the second time, hits him with the spear. I'm like, oh, it's over. Cause he hooked the other leg with his leg. Oh, it's over. Kicks out again. Like, it kept the suspense going. I thought the match was fantastic. And you know what? You set this up WrestleMania down the line or something. I could see this as like a long-term feud that is like, you know, they'll eventually get back together and square up again, you know?
So is that where you think they're going? Because I feel like the rumors might be true of what they want to do for WrestleMania. And this whole tribal chief, head of the family, head of the table, is probably the early setting for a Roman Reigns versus The Rock match at WrestleMania. Do you see it going that way?
They have to build to it now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the pieces are in place. I'm head of the family. We were talking about this last night also with my family. It's like, you know, they're all connected. NOYEs, my Avias, they're all connected. Everybody's a cousin, second cousin, uncle, son, brother, you know. And, you know, The Rock has acknowledged Roman as his cousin. He had him in Hobbs and Shaw. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He came out for him at the Royal Rumble when he won that night, helped save him. And now he keeps saying he's the tribal chief. He's the head of the family. And who's the one person that could say, I'm coming to challenge his status? It's the damn Rock. And if his schedule is available, they need to book this match for Mania. And it's in L.A. Rock has gone Hollywood. He's one of the biggest action stars in Hollywood, or probably the biggest action star in Hollywood right now.
Yep.
It's like, dude, all the stars are aligned. It's all in place. Heel Roman versus The Rock. That is licensed to print money right there. That's one of the biggest main events you could do.
Yeah, and especially the way that they are building Roman and that it's working. It's a shame it's not in front of a live audience. You know, who knows when we're going to come on the other side of this whole COVID thing. But if this was in front of a live audience, I feel like Roman would be getting cheered right now, because that's just the nature of how fans are right now and have been for a while. Like, it is just working on all fronts, and he is a monster right now. And I think the only way for him to go would be for him and The Rock at WrestleMania. And I would even leave the Universal title on him until then, make it a Universal title match and have Roman go over. That's my early WrestleMania prediction.
You have to have Roman go over because he's going to go over regardless.
Yeah.
If you have The Rock go over, I mean, I can see why The Rock. Oh, okay. So I'm going to interrupt with this. Lana and Nia Jax ran over the table. Not exactly a measure of revenge, but she got something. So it's there. We're sprinkling. They're going to give you the tickle. That's what it is. The little tickle every time. Anyway. So getting back to what I was saying. Yes. So listen, it makes sense for Rock to win if Rock's going to stick around. He's not going to stick around.
Right.
Roman's your guy. Yep. Right. So, you know, maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves. Maybe Rock does win. You know how they decide stuff last minute there. You know, Rock and a Roman is just your big, it's your marquee match. That would cement Roman a million times over. I mean, and this is the thing that people were saying, even Austin was saying for the longest time, yo, dude, just turn Roman heel and do it. Let him run with it. And they finally did it. When he came back, I mean, all signs were pointing to him beating Goldberg in Mania anyway, before he opted out because of COVID, and rightfully so. You know, he had newborn babies. And, you know, he comes back, he has a new look, he's jacked like you wouldn't believe, you know, got the new teeth, looking all fantastic. And, you know, he does this heel turn, this subtle heel turn, you know, the Heyman angle and everything. And it's everything is working on all fronts, everything, every week. It's good. And then at first when I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, Jay is the number one contender, going to do like a whole cousin versus cousin thing. It'll cement the heel status. But no, it's like that match at Hell in a Cell. The story of him crying, you know, Jimmy comes out, but then he gets Jimmy in the guillotine so he could say, I quit. Dude, it's just working. And whoever's planning that out with Roman, whoever the producer that's working, That's what I miss about WWE. That's excellent storytelling. And that's something that, as a lifelong WWE fan, it's been missing for a very long time. I mean, you have flashes here and there. Like I said, Bayley and Sasha Banks angle is really good. And you have this going on right now. But the thing is, angle and when, why not multiple angles going on at one time? You know what I mean? You know, you should have the, you should have your mid-card feuds, and you should have your, you know, long-term stories on every level of the company, you know? And it seems to be lacking. This right now, though, you, that's your marquee piece on your marquee show, and then you build around that. That right there, Roman as champion. Dude, I mean, I really hope, knock on wood, that there's a vaccine soon that can have fans in that building, because that's going to blow the roof off of LA if it happens, man. It's, that's going to be, that's the match, and you have to do it. I can't see anything else right now but that.
Yeah, I am looking forward to that. I hope that it, that we can get there. So yeah, so that was the main event as far as the card, but the show wasn't over after that. The Undertaker, 30 years of being in the WWE, said his final farewell, and a lot of legends came out to show their appreciation for him. Vince McMahon even spoke. He referred to it as the WWF, which apparently fans are going nuts over, and rightfully so, because I miss WWF.
It's like, ooh, he said the F. Like, big deal. Like, okay, great. It's his company. He can say whatever the hell he wants.
You know? No, I think going nuts in a good way. Like, it was nice to hear.
Right.
But yeah, like, it's over. It's been a long time coming. I mean, I've been saying for a long time that Undertaker needs to hang it up. But to actually watch him do it after years of watching his career, it's surreal. You know, it speaks to our age, and we're not old guys, but it speaks to the way that time works and how we've watched his entire career in the WWE start and now come to an end.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, listen, never say never. This guy could come back at any moment, right? I mean, I thought the Boneyard match was a hell of a way to go out. We've talked about that previously. Mm-hmm. You know, it was good. One last match. I got to be completely honest with you, though, dude. The farewell was very underwhelming for me. I don't know what I expected, but I expected more. You know, you had all those guys come out. It was great to see the whole BSK, you know, yeah. Savio Vega, Henry Godwin, Kane come out in full gear. Savio Vega came out with a Puerto Rican flag. Mm-hmm. Henry Godwin and Phineas Godwin came out with their overalls. And then, like, Kane came out, didn't say hi to nobody. He was just, like, in character the whole time. And then they disappeared for Vince. I mean, I think they were actually along the barrier. He came out, kind of said, I thought he was going to give more of a speech. But then again, that's not an Undertaker's character to give more of a speech that way. I thought it was going to be Undertaker and then take off the hat. Now it's Mark Calloway saying goodbye to everybody. But it wasn't. He stayed Undertaker. It's true to the nature. He stayed in character the whole time. What did get me was the pallbearer hologram at the very end, which was pretty cool. I thought that was awesome. What a nice touch, dude. You know, that was great. I thought that's what really got me. I thought that was the best part, but I thought it would be a little more, like, I thought they were going to sprinkle in little Undertaker memories throughout the whole night, which they didn't. They saved it for the very end. At one point, I thought they were going to end the show at the end of the Drew Roman match, because they were showing the Broken Skull Sessions commercial, and I thought it was the actual thing, and I was like, what the hell's going on? What just happened?
Yeah, I thought that too.
Yeah, I thought, you know, but I expected more. I mean, because they did the 30 Days of Taker. They did his, like, greatest match tournament, which they just announced the winner of. And then, you know, they did all these different things for him, all these different documentaries and everything. And it was kind of just like time for the Undertaker to rest in peace, which was cool. But I don't know. Maybe it was just for 30 years. I guess maybe the fan of me just wanted, like, I don't know. And I can't put my finger on what it is. I just wanted something else. If that makes sense.
Well, crazy. I think the problem and the thing that was missing was the fans. Like, we needed that fan reaction, that organic live fan reaction to him actually going away. Them piping in the thank you Taker stuff. It's weird, you know, and I get why they're doing it, but it doesn't feel genuine. And to me, as I was watching it, I was like, man, I wish that there was people there, because you needed that emotion that, you know, you needed that emotion from the fans of sending him off the right way.
I couldn't agree more. And that's what we sound like. He needs, unfortunately, there's no way around it. He's retiring. Yep. We're in the middle of a pandemic. The Thunderdome thing, I think, has actually been excellent. And I think it's safer because now we're seeing how cases are spiking up everywhere. And the fact that they didn't go with fans and the audiences anymore, I thought was a smart move. It's better than what they did have for a long time with just the NXT people, or then it was nothing before that. Right. You know, so there's nothing we could do about that, unfortunately. I'm glad that he did get a somewhat of a send off with the fans in the Thunderdome. Yes, he does need fans. Hopefully, if he goes in the Hall of Fame, there will be fans present that can give him a proper send off. You know, it was just, I agree with you on that. But, you know, given the world the way it is right now, man, you know,
it's tough.
It's difficult. The fact they got all those guys in, which was great. I thought, you know, all the legends and stuff like that. But if you think about it, dude, like 1990, I think we were 4 years old. You know, and now it's 30 years later, and we're much older now, obviously. And he's just now hanging up the boots.
It's but crazy.
He's a guy. I mean, for in my opinion, I think Undertaker is the greatest gimmick in WWE history. Yep. The fact that he's like, you know, he kind of reminds me of Metallica, the way they always just change their image, you know, and like, you know, kind of just go with the times. And the way the character itself is timeless because he always revamped it. He always changed it. It wasn't just always a dead man. You know, the American Badass for a while. He was Big Evil for a while. He was kind of like that hybrid of both. Then he went back to the dead man. And, you know, I loved how he ended it with the Unholy Trinity, which was, you know, American Badass, The Undertaker, Mark Calloway. It was the combination of all three that ended off with AJ Styles. Yep. You know, it was just a proper send off, and just I don't know. I mean, what was your, in the terms of the different incarnations of Undertaker, what would you say is your favorite version?
Definitely the Deadman. You know, I didn't dislike the American Badass. I thought it was. I understand the changes, right? The changes sometimes need to be made to keep people fresh, and I liked it during its run. But when he came back as the dead man at WrestleMania 20 in 2004, and me and you were both in attendance for that, that was like, as far as me going to wrestling shows, that was like the highlight, like to see the dead man come out and to witness in person that entrance. There's nothing like that for a wrestling fan. So to me, he's the dead man. He'll always be the dead man. And that's the gimmick that I want to remember him for, because that was my favorite incarnation. As far as like the different versions of the dead man, when like he started the Ministry of Darkness one, and even the most recent ones, one of the moments that will stick out for me forever when it comes to The Undertaker is what happened, and I'm going back years now, at Royal Rumble 1994, when it was him and Yokozuna in that casket match. Everybody interfered. It seemed like every heel they had on the roster just came out and beat up The Undertaker, stuffed him in the casket. And I remember it like it was yesterday. Like they
were heels united all of a sudden.
Exactly. They were wheeling him down the ramp, and the smoke started coming out. You see Undertaker pop up on the screen like he's inside the coffin. The coffin kind of explodes. He's floating up. And I remember actually being scared of that. And I just thought, like, as much as I am afraid of what he's doing right now, it's also the coolest thing I've ever seen. And that's the Undertaker that I will always kind of cherish.
Yeah, you know, I'm 100% agree with you. Like, when we were kids and we kind of still thought that there was some type of realness to wrestling, the Undertaker was the scariest mofo we've ever seen. Like, and I remember the, like, when I was a kid, it was like, well, what's in the urn? Well, how does Paul Bearer have any? I remember for the longest time, the rumor was that it was his mother's ashes. Mother's ashes in the urn. And then in 94, and they opened, and like that green mist came out. And I was like, hey, his mother's ashes, what the hell? You know? And like, you know, he would just have that look like he hadn't slept for days. Yeah. Like that withdrawn look with the purple makeup around the eyes. And I remember being like, dude, is he really dead? Why does he sit up like that? They're like, you know, I'm a kid, I'm like 5-6 years old at this point, 7 at the time too. You know, like, it was the closest believable as believable could be, where you thought like, damn, wrestling's real because look at The Undertaker, right? He lived the gimmick, you know? That would be my favorite incarnation. Later on, it had to have been, you know, the second coming of the Dead Man, just because when he was like that de facto leader on SmackDown, he had those matches with Edge, with Eddie, with Batista. When his wrestling really ramped up and he was having those, like, because the first run of his WrestleMania streak was kind of crappy in terms of matches. Giant Gonzalez, King Kong Bundy, you know, those things. And then you had, like, later on when it was, like, Randy Orton, Mark Henry, the match with CM Punk, the trilogy with Triple H, the two with Shawn Michaels, the one with Ric Flair. Like, he just, it was good match after good match after good match. And then the two with Shawn, that was just like, my God, probably one of my all-time favorite WrestleMania matches, probably one of my all-time favorite matches, like, ever. Like, if you want to get somebody into wrestling, you show them Taker Shawn from Mania. That's like one of the quintessential Mania matches, you know? And, you know, like that later incarnation where he was just, you know, he would come once a year for Mania, but he was churning out match of the year quality type matches, you know? And I was there, we were there for 20 when he came back with Paul Bearer. And I was there later on for 29 when he came back and Paul Bearer had just died. And he stole the show that night with CM Punk.
Yep.
It's like I said, the greatest gimmick ever, probably the one of the best to ever do it. That, I mean, I think Mark Henry's selling Friday Don Corleone. Like, that's the guy. That's the measuring stick. Like, you want to be the Undertaker, you know? And everyone in the back talks about how respected Undertaker is amongst everybody, and like that respect amongst his peers is like second to none. And dude, I mean, honestly, he'll be missed. There'll never be another Undertaker, and there'll never be another like him. There'll never be another streak, you know, and that's something he could always hang his hat on, honestly. He never had like the crazy long world title runs and everything like that, but every other accolade, he's the first number 30 to win the Royal Rumble. Everything else, it pales in comparison to the actual phenom itself. Like that's it, man.
Let's have a little bit of fun now with what the WWE did with the bracket of the Undertaker's greatest matches. The match that won was Undertaker Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 25.
Rightfully so, though. Come on.
It's hard to argue, of course. So we agree that that match is hard to argue and that deserves to be the winner.
There's some ones here that might be like the sneaky Cinderella story that might come and sneak steal. I mean, it's hard though. 20, I mean, the last two matches were 25 and 26, right? Yeah. Am I right? That was the finals. I mean, yep. Two fantastic matches. It's hard, but I mean, so I like how they split brackets. Go ahead with that.
Now, is that match your personal favorite, or do you have another personal favorite Undertaker match?
Okay, there's a few here. So Randy Orton at WrestleMania 21, super underrated. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. The match with Batista at 23, man, that's probably one of Batista's best matches ever. The Boneyard match, I think, yes, it's later on in his career, but dude, did that not set the tone for WrestleMania weekend in the midst of a pandemic? You want to talk about entertaining? And then, of course, you know, the Hell in a Cell of Mankind put Mick Foley on the map. The one time where I thought somebody died in the ring, I thought Foley was paralyzed.
We all did.
The whole time, I literally thought it was an accident. He didn't mean to throw him over the cage. And to find out that it was planned the entire time is insane. And if you watch the Broken Skull sessions after Survivor Series, he said that, you know, yes, the plan for him to fall through the cage was never the plan. The plan was for that part of the cage to actually break away.
But not
to eventually, like, kind of, yeah, slowly make their way down into the ring. Right. And had he not put his feet on the support beam, he's like, I would have landed right on Mick. He probably would have died that night. That's insane, dude. Like, you know, but yeah, I'm in total agreement. You know, I gotta be honest with you. I do not like any match that he ever had with Kane. I don't. They have two here, right? Unforgiven 98 and WrestleMania 14. Don't like either of those. I would have called it a draw and just moved the HBK match from Bad Blood all the way to the finals of that bracket, which is also a highly, I mean, the first Hell in a Cell match. That's a fantastic match too.
Yeah, that is one of my personal favorite Undertaker matches. Whenever I think of like his greatest rivals, his greatest matches, Shawn Michaels obviously sticks out. Him and Mankind, Mick Foley, and the matches that they had are unforgettable to me. And one of the matches that I really, really loved was their Boiler Room match at SummerSlam 96. So I think I would go with that one.
A Boiler Room Brawl, is that even on here? I didn't even see. I see Buried Alive in the 1990s bracket. I don't see, which is surprising because I do like the Boiler Room Brawl myself. Yeah, wow. I don't think it's on here at all, to be honest with you. I will say this. I don't understand why the Undertaker versus Undertaker match from SummerSlam 94 is on here. I mean, I get it's in the wild card bracket, but no. Like, that match
We remember SummerSlam 94 for the whole Undertaker versus Undertaker thing, but not for the right reasons.
Right, exactly. It's not one of those like, holy shit, what another great underrated match. We're talking about like, nah, that match was crap. Like, but there's some really good ones here. I do like how they included the Royal Rumble match from 2002, the Shane McMahon match to Hell in a Cell, which was also a pretty decent match. I think it's more known for Shane just, you know,
being crazy.
Right, you know. To be honest with you, the one that sticks out for me, I mean, listen, 25, it's hard to not put 25. I will say this. I would replace WrestleMania 26 with the Mankind match from King of the Ring as the upset, just because of what happened in that match. Dude, that was Attitude Era at its finest. I mean, he threw the dude off the cage. And the best line, the best line is when he goes to the top of the cell and the chair hits him in the face, and JR's like, so will somebody please stop the damn match? And Jerry Lawler's just like, that's it. He's dead. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's just like, yes, you know. But I agree with this. I love the 25 match. You know what I do love, though, how they added the Undertaker Jeff Hardy ladder match from Raw, which was
a great match.
And I think, you know, I do like a lot of these matches here. There are some that might have, again, maybe I'm in the minority here, at Wrestling Guys PC on Twitter if you disagree, but the Undertaker versus Kane matches just never did it for me. The one at 14, we saw it again at 20, the Inferno match at Unforgiven. They just never had the match you would expect for two brothers in storyline. They just never did it. I don't think they ever pulled it off, to be honest with you. Maybe, and that's just my opinion. You know, I don't know how everybody else feels about that. But
no, I think I might agree, because, you know, when you talk about his greatest matches, those matches don't stick out. What sticks out about Undertaker and Kane is the storyline, the initial storyline with Paul Bearer telling him, you know, your brother's alive and you're a murderer, and, you know, the debut of Kane. That may be Undertaker's greatest storyline with somebody, is what he did.
I would agree. It just never translated to a good in-ring match.
Right.
You know, but, you know, that too, you know, I know, I see here that they added in the Bray Wyatt Undertaker match too from 31. And he's talking about doing, the one thing that he missed was doing something with The Fiend. Mm-hmm. And part of me, for some reason, felt last night when he was making the speech that somehow The Fiend was going to come out and they're going to set up another angle. And I was like, dude, I'm so glad they didn't do that. Because listen, man, it's good to just ride off into the sunset. You know, rest on what you did, not on the future. Because there's always going to be, if you're always looking for that next match, it's never going to end. You know what I mean? Like, exactly, you're always looking for that. And rightfully so. You know, these guys never want to hang it up. But yeah, dude, I agree. I do like the 25 match. I probably would swap out the King of the Ring match. I'm probably going to get some hate for that, but I don't care. So that's it. I mean, yeah, I'm cool with it. I do love this. I wish they would do more of these greatest match tournaments in terms of like legends, because this was one of the highlights of the week for me to see this when they were doing the whole 30 Days of Taker thing, which I thought was awesome.
Well, we're going to be doing some of our own of those, which I think is our goal here on the Wrestling Guys for the Future, is to do things like wrestler spotlights, greatest matches, brackets like we saw WWE do for Undertaker. I think our plan is to also do some watch-alongs for some classic pay-per-views. So make sure that you are sticking with us for all of the great content that's going to come in the future. One last thing before we try to wrap things up here. Is there, and I know the answer, well, I know what my answer is, but is there one superstar, one wrestler that you wish you would have seen Undertaker in the ring with? And it should be an obvious answer, at least from my perspective, because it's Sting. I will always kind of regret from a fan's point of view that we never saw Undertaker versus Sting?
All right, so I'm a since you went the Sting route, because that'll probably be my number one. Unfortunately, you know, did you ever hear the story that Sting said that when he initially was going to come over before he went to TNA, the plan was for him versus Kurt Angle at first, not Undertaker, which also shocks me. Also, that would have been a phenomenal match, but regardless.
Yep.
I'm going to say this. Even though they did have a WrestleMania match, I always wanted to see Undertaker versus Cena with a build, not some rush job. I'm trying to have a match at Mania just to get on the card. Undertaker never responded to me until the night of. So I was sitting in the crowd and I ran out. I put my gear on. Undertaker squashed me in like 5 minutes. And that was it, because it did nothing for the two of them. It did the match no justice. It did the build no justice. I never understood why they chose to do it the way they did. And maybe it was because that Undertaker didn't know if he was ready or not.
Right.
Until the last minute. But at the same time, dude, I don't know, man. They missed out on a huge, huge opportunity with that. I know that. I'm cheating here. I know you said never had a match with, but I want that match with a proper build, not the crap that they did that year. I'm sorry. I hated that, honestly. I wish they would have did something else with that. So I'm going to go Cena. I don't care.
I remember being disappointed with how it was a squash, because I didn't understand it. Like, I didn't understand why they squashed Cena, even though it is Undertaker.
Right.
But I think a proper build, I mean, that could have been one of the biggest matches in history.
I mean, the thing is, too, like, if you watch The Last Ride, it seems like, the Undertaker was good to go. He was healthy, and he wanted more time, but for whatever reason, they made it the match like that the way it was. And he felt great in the ring, but he didn't seem like that's the way he wanted the match to go. And I 1,000% agree with him. I don't understand why they did it that way. And that's the only reason why I say that, because, you know, I figure, you know, you went to Sting. Yeah, Sting, I mean, Sting has to be the number one, right? Do you ever see the fan-created picture of Sting holding up the Joker card, like it's Heath Ledger from Batman, The Dark Knight, excuse me. And in the card, it's The Undertaker, and it says The Streak on the card. It's pretty fantastic. Yeah. If you've never seen it, look it up. It's something that you're like, damn, I wish they did that, man. You know?
Yeah, I have seen that. And I also watched probably an interview definitely on YouTube, but I don't remember who he was talking to. Sting mentioned talking to The Undertaker and saying to him, you know, I would love to come in and work with you. And Undertaker was just like, oh, okay. And Sting felt like Undertaker wasn't interested, which I was like, listening to that, I was like, huh, really? I was like, why would he, if that's true, why would he
not
be?
Right. But maybe giving him the no sell there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, a missed opportunity there, but there's nothing we can do about it now. Because
never say never, man. I don't know why, but you know, Sting comes back all of a sudden, and then he does the match with Taker, and they're both just geriatric, hobbling all over the ring, which I hope I never see. But again, never say never, man.
I think if it was cinematic, it would work.
You see, we had talked about this in the WrestleMania review on Fans Perspective podcast, where we said, like, you know, the Boneyard match opens up a lot of doors for Taker to do further matches, because you could do a Sting match too because of his injuries and make it cinematic and make it work, you know. But, you know, I think it's better off him riding off to the sunset, Sting doing what he's doing right now. You know, I just hope that I hope it stays that way. He seems content about his retirement, and it's cool like that. You know, you don't want to see, and I think he has the right attitude of him not wanting to be a parody of himself. And that's the best way, and the best, and this is my opinion, obviously. I don't talk to Taker. I've never talked to him a day in my life. But that's the best mentality to have if you're walking away from a business you've been in forever. Yeah. You know, I don't want to be a joke. Like, why is this guy still wrestling? And we say that a lot about people. We've said that a lot about other, like, why is Flair still wrestling? Why is Hogan still wrestling? You know, we've said that a lot. So I think it's better off, and I'm glad that he has that thought process going in. He'll be missed regardless.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, so that wraps up our look at Survivor Series and The Undertaker's career. I'm sure in the future we'll talk more about his career. Our first in the revamped Wrestling Guys podcast. And I talked a little bit about what's coming down the pipeline. Anything you want to add to that before we sign off about what the listeners can expect?
We want to do something different, right? We just don't want to be here. I mean, obviously, we're one day removed from Survivor Series. We want to talk about it. We want to talk about Undertaker's retirement. And as we wrap it up here, you know, we want to do some different things. You got some ideas for us, you know, send it your way at WrestlingGuysPC at Twitter. The Twitter handle still has been going since we've been gone. We were down, but the Twitter feed was always blowing up. You know how to reach us. You know, Apple, iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic.com. We're going to keep that going for the time being until we get some other things up and running. And as we still are building this up, and then we will be tweeting out best ways for you to reach us and let us know. And like we said, different topics, different things, man. We want to, you know, I love the watch along concept. I love the profile concept, which we're definitely going to keep going. You know, we used to do the Higher Fire return. All that stuff is coming back. And to the best of our abilities, you know, we're adults, we have lives, but at the same time, we enjoy doing this. We enjoy talking about it, you know. And with that being said, we'll wrap it up here. So for Fizz, for the as not yet named, we'll just keep calling him Chris in the meantime. This has been the Wrestling Guys Podcast. As usual, we came to talk about wrestling, drink some beer. We're just about all out of beers. Both glasses are empty. I'm going to clink it to sign off because we're virtual. 6 feet, stay safe, wash your hands, wear a damn mask, let this be over. How you doing? Take it easy.